Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. Today we're going to talk about President Trump's ideas for tax reform. Last week he put out a one-page outline of those ideas, and the president says his goals are to grow the economy, create jobs, simplify the tax code, and lower taxes for families and businesses. This one-page outline has a long, hard road ahead through Congress, but if these changes do become law, how will they affect you, your family, your business, and our economy? Today, we have three guests who are going to help us figure this out a little bit. Kelly O'Donnell is a consultant and a research professor of economics here at UNM. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
James Jimenez is the executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children, a nonprofit that advocates for policies that improve the lives of children. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Gwyneth.
And Richard Anklum leads the New Mexico Tax Research Institute. Thank you for being here, Richard.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to look at the big picture for a minute, and I'm going to ask you guys some questions about the plan, and I want you to tell me yes, no, or maybe. Something like that, right?
So maybe.
Dang it. So, Kelly, on NPR last week, I heard a guy who used to be an economist for Joe Biden say that Trump's tax plan sounds like a shopping list for rich people who want to avoid taxes. Is that fair?
Yes.
Oh, well, that was a good short answer. We'll get back to that idea. Richard, Trump says he wants to grow the economy. Could this plan do that?
Maybe.
Okay.
But
yeah,
okay. Not
one
like
word,
he promises.
One word. And James, President Trump says he wants to give relief to middle-income families. Could this plan do that?
Some of it does.
Maybe is the answer.
Maybe.
Okay, good. We'll tease that out a little bit. So let's look at a couple of the details here that are specific. And you might have heard of some of these details, but, you know, a lot of tax stuff is kind of gibberish to a lot of people. So we'll try and help you make some sense of it. Kelly, we have seven tax brackets now, and Trump wants to turn them into three different brackets. So people earning up to X amount will only pay 10%. People up to X other amount will pay 25%. And the next tier, 35%. He hasn't said what those amounts are, but does it make sense to move to three? Is that going to make it simpler and fairer?
Might make it a little bit simpler, simply because three is less than seven. But without any details, there's no way of knowing whether that's fairer or not. Certainly, the reduction in the top marginal income tax rate will make the federal income tax system more regressive, meaning it'll give bigger breaks to upper income people at the and really not impact lower income people much at all.
Is there any way it that you can envision it being much fairer?
I can envision a much fairer federal tax system, absolutely. I can't envision that emerging necessarily from these 19 essentially nonsensical bullets.
Okay. Richard, Trump said he wants to double the standard deduction. Now, I recognize that phrase from my taxes, which I do not do myself because they're so complicated. But I don't know what this means if we double it. What does that mean for the average taxpayer?
For the average taxpayer, it means they can earn more money before they have to start paying taxes. That's what you take off the top before you start applying the tax brackets and the rates and computing your tax liability. So, yeah, if he expands that, that will take more income off the table for everyone, all taxpayers, actually, that don't itemize. And it will make sure that taxpayers who do itemize, fewer of them will, because they will just take the standard deduction now.
And who, I know I itemize. Who are the people who itemize?
You know, most people, when they itemize, it's state and local taxes. It's things like mortgage interest. And the Trump plan, it's really, you know, not clear exactly what he does, but he is getting rid of, I believe, the state and local tax deduction, at least. You know, Kelly made fun of it. It's easy to make fun of. The plan that he released April 26th with one page, 200 words, seven numbers, and can't be found on the Treasury or White House website.
I couldn't find it either.
I have a copy of it. I don't know where it came from.
I found it on Twitter. Someone took a picture of it.
It's insane. Yeah, no, it's not a plan, as Kelly was saying. So it's impossible to really model because there's not enough information there to really do anything with.
Okay, so if, you know, as this moves forward, we will get more details. And so hopefully we'll be in a better place to know what they mean after we've had this conversation. So, James, one of the things on this one-page 19-bullet point thing has to do with helping families pay for childcare. And it doesn't say how, but how much of an expense is childcare for New Mexicans? Is this a really big deal?
Well, let's put it this way. A family who pays childcare for a toddler, taking them to a daycare 5 days a week, roughly 50 weeks out of the year, assuming they take a couple of weeks off, is actually paying more for childcare than a student pays in tuition here at UNM. I mean, that gives us some context for the struggles that particularly moderate and low-income families face when we are trying to incentivize work. We don't make it easy for families to find affordable childcare, and there's a whole host of social problems that develop from that. But this plan, because it so lacks in details, doesn't give us any ideas whether or not it's directing that assistance to the people who really need it the most, who are moderate and low-income people. Single parent trying to work full-time as a child or two, trying to provide daycare for, you know, it's that is the person who really this ought to be targeted towards. But I suspect that like much of the rest of the plan, it's really going to be targeted at people who don't need it as much as this a single parent.
Child care is a painful expense for everyone who has to pay it, but it's particularly painful for the people who make the least.
Absolutely,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah. So, folks, we want to hear from you. We're talking this morning about how President Trump wants to change our tax system. Do you feel like you pay too much in taxes? Should we cut taxes on families and corporations? What do you think? Call us now. We want to hear from you. The phone number here is 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. 866. You can also email us at callinshow@kunm.org. So one of the things that President Trump says he wants to do is make this more simple. And some of our listeners probably sign one piece of paper, two pieces of paper on April 15th and call it good. You know, I'm a freelance journalist. My tax return is like an inch thick. It's like half an inch thick. It's huge. And there are millions of pages in there. I have no idea what they mean. I don't know what I'm signing at all. I admit that. These super thick returns include a lot of deductions for stuff that I don't know about, but my accountant tells me I'm allowed to take. These are rules that allow people to not pay taxes on certain things. Kelly, why do we have so many deductions in our federal tax code?
Well, I think we have deductions in the federal tax code for a lot of the same reasons we have it in the state tax code. I mean, some of them are warranted, certainly, because there are expenses associated with doing business, or they are expenses that are, you know, that are basic core expenses that people must incur just in life. And so there are expenses like for instance, if you have a lot of healthcare costs, some of those become deductible. Mortgage interest is deductible, the idea being you need a house to live in, and home ownership is a desirable thing. So certain core expenses are deductible. In addition, there are many deductions that are in the tax code that are politically motivated. So there are some that are certainly quite valid and beneficial to middle income folks, upper income folks, and some that are arguably less important. I think that one of the scary things about the Trump plan is that it eliminates a lot of the deductions, like the deduction for health care expenses and state and local taxes, or state and local taxes paid, that are potentially pretty damaging to middle-income people.
Now, you mentioned this idea that the money that you pay in taxes to New Mexico, you are allowed to not pay federal tax on, right? You can deduct that from the amount of income that you show the federal government. And Trump wants to eliminate that. I've seen that critics say this is really going to hurt people in states where they pay very high taxes, New York and California. But what about New Mexico? It seems like our taxes are lower than that.
Well, they certainly are lower than New York or California. But that doesn't mean that it's an inconsequential bite for some households. So, yes, certainly we would be less harmed than some of the states with high personal income taxes. But that doesn't mean there wouldn't be an impact on middle-income families in New Mexico. I'd like to just, I think that there's a point that we haven't yet made that I think is really important. You know, this tax plan is vague, but there's one thing that is pretty obvious in it, and I think that there's general agreement on both sides of the aisle, and that is that it's going to cost trillions of dollars, and that's money that the state that the federal government doesn't have. So if this tax plan is implemented, or any variant on it is implemented, we're talking about either adding to the deficit to the tune of trillions of dollars, or cutting spending. And New Mexico stands to lose a tremendous amount if the federal government starts cutting spending on programs like Medicaid, which is definitely on the table with reform of the Affordable Care Act.
And Gwyneth, on that particular point, I see this as maybe even a little more sinister than Kelly does, in that I think this is part of this grand strategy that some conservatives had for quite some time. It's called Starve the Beast strategy, where you deprive the federal government of revenues it needs to provide basic services, and then you can make the case that, well, we need to cut spending to balance the budget. So you take the revenues out because we think it's going to do some great things, but then on the other side, sort of disingenuously, we make the argument that, well, in order to balance the budget, we need to cut spending. And so who gets targeted? Moderate and low-income families get targeted in that kind of plan. It's certainly not the upper-income people. And they also know that once a tax cut is in place, it's extremely hard to undo that. And so what they're trying to do, I think, is to set a long-term path where they can make more justification for cutting spending in the federal budget.
But Richard, this is a very popular idea that if we just lessen the tax burden on businesses, they will expand, they will invest, they will create jobs. Isn't there a legitimate argument in there somewhere?
Sort of, kind of, maybe. And yeah, there's legitimate reasons for real tax reform. And I think there's common consensus on both sides of the aisle that there is a need for that. Even at the state level, we know we're talking about tax reform. That doesn't mean that there's a consensus on how that should be accomplished. This isn't really tax reform that we're seeing from the Trump proposal. It's just tax cuts, as has been mentioned. The question is, does it all fall to the deficit and to our children and grandkids to pay for, or is it an insidious plan to reduce spending in the near term, or both? But the plan itself, if you ask them, Mnuchin will insist that it's going to be paid for with growth resulting from this plan. Now, when you put money in people's pockets, they can artificially stimulate the economy. We talk about doing that in various ways all the time, and that could happen again at the expense of your grandkids. So it's that problem again. I'm going to go to the casino tonight instead of saving for my retirement. That's what his plan does. It assumes 3% growth. Now, that doesn't sound like a whole lot in terms of
it's a small number.
Yeah, 3%. Currently, we're growing at 1.9.
So it's absurd.
So
it really is absurd.
It is absurd.
To expect that these kinds of tax cuts would result in all of a sudden this incredible investment in productivity and output that is going to offset the cost of these tax cuts. It won't happen.
1.9 to 3 is the economic equivalent of the black box that says, and then a miracle will happen. that's what we're looking at here.
And we have no historical precedent. I mean, this is the sort of insanity where you keep doing the same thing and getting the same result and doing it over and over again. We have no evidence at the federal or the state level that these sorts of tax cuts even come close to paying for themselves. They're expensive. And although we persist in this mythology that one of these days tax cuts will actually pay for themselves, it has never happened.
Folks, we're going to take a really quick break, but we do want to hear from you when we come back. This plan does include cutting tax rates on businesses significantly. Does it sound like that's going to benefit you? Does the idea of tax relief for childcare sound attractive to you? What do you think? Could this plan pay for itself? Do you have the faith that is required here that it will? Let us know. We want to hear from you. The number is 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page. Look for KUNM Radio, or you can follow us on Twitter at KUNM News, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from DaVita Medical Group, who believes everything matters. They provide access to primary care doctors and specialists at 15 locations across Albuquerque and Rio Rancho. Doctor listings are found at DaVitaMedGroupNM.com.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
When she was 16, cellist Elisa Weilerstein played Bach for the first time in public. She made it through the first movement.
I was very, very happy with the way that went in the concert, and then there was the Allemande afterwards, and so I thought, okay, now I can relax. That wasn't such a good idea.
Elisa Weilerstein shares her Bach trauma and plays Bach beautifully now on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. I am here with Kelly O'Donnell, a tax policy consultant, James Jimenez with the nonprofit Voices for Children, and Richard Anklem with the New Mexico Tax Research Institute. We have a caller on the line. We've been talking about whether or not cutting taxes will grow the economy enough to pay for itself. And we have Scott on the line this morning. Scott, good morning and welcome to the show.
Thanks. I think, Gwyneth, you should avoid repeating the false assertion that by cutting taxes, you stimulate the economy. That's been proven to be false at least three times in the last 35 years. In the early 80s, Ronald Reagan cut taxes, and there was a recession. In the early 2000s, George Bush cut taxes, and there was a mild recession. And in Kansas, in the last several years, Brownback, the governor there, cut taxes, and there's been a terrible, terrible recession in terms of growth over there in Kansas. So this whole idea of cutting taxes and growing business is all about cutting taxes for rich people, and it's all a transfer of wealth from moderate and low-income people to rich people. Moderate and low-income people rely on the services the government provides, and the rich people can pay for everything. So I wish, and I'm looking forward to the day when people stop imagining that somehow this trickle-down economics actually works. It doesn't, and we need to. It's like the flat Earth. There's no flat Earth. There's no trickle-down, growth from trickle-down economics.
So Scott, what I want to ask you before you go: what do you think President Trump should do? I mean, this has to go through Congress. Everyone listening has the opportunity to call your senators and your representatives and tell them what you think they should do about taxes. What do you want to see happen?
I think they should raise taxes on the rich, and transfer wealth, all the wealth that's been transferred from. Since Ronald Reagan, since 1980, all the wealth that's been transferred to the rich, they need to raise taxes on them and transfer it back to the low and middle income people and create the services and the infrastructure and the healthcare system that everybody knows that we need in this country, rather than imagining that by giving rich people more money, they're going to somehow create jobs. They're not going to create jobs. Jobs are created by demand. And just by giving all the money on the supply side doesn't create jobs. So I think they should raise taxes on the rich.
Scott, thank you for that. Kelly and Richard, what do you think about this idea? So, you know, if we have no evidence that cutting taxes does increase growth in this way, is there evidence that cutting taxes on the rich in a significant way does something else to the economy?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's, especially in a state like New Mexico, when we have, let me give just a quick example of one of the ways that Trump's tax plan would really reduce the tax burden for fairly wealthy people. It eliminates the estate tax, and that's a tax that's levied for a married couple would be levied on them if they inherited an estate worth more than $11 million. So that's, you know, that's a pretty big estate by New Mexico standards. I'm sure there are people in the state who have estates of that size, but not many. And so that's a really significant tax advantage for people who have a great deal of inherited wealth.
So wait, you're telling me that if someone's, you know, family member dies and they, a married couple, inherit $11 million, they wouldn't pay any tax on that money?
No, they would pay tax on it, but they would not pay the federal estate tax on it. And what we're talking about is getting rid of the estate tax, which is the tax on inherited money. So there, that's an example of a tax cut that benefits wealthy people entirely. And so we need to be really clear about that. But the fact of the matter is that when we take, when we redistribute income through programs like child care subsidies or health insurance for low and moderate income people, as we did through the Affordable Care Act, we stimulate the economy. We create jobs. And there is evidence of that. So we have evidence that by investing federal money in programs that actually benefit the individual family's bottom line in terms of their ability to educate their children and obtain the health care they need, that we do create jobs. That is actually a form of economic stimulus for the economy. Whereas we don't have evidence giving tax cuts to the wealthy and reducing the services we can afford to provide for regular people has any benefit for the economy. So we're doing the exact opposite of what we should be doing in order to stimulate job growth and to improve the quality of life.
So Kelly just said estate tax, but that phrase is nowhere on this one page. Trump calls it a death tax.
Yeah, that sounds better, doesn't it? Because it's populism. It's all populism. That's, you know, he preaches to all sides, but that's what it is. It's designed to make everyone feel good. Tax the guy behind the tree. I'm going to make you feel better. But it's not paid for. And that's that's the fundamental problem.
We have a lot of things that are very popular in the tax code that critics say don't make sense. The mortgage deduction. I take it. Thank goodness I take it, right, because I own a house and it means a lot to me. But there are folks who say this does not succeed in the stated goal of giving a tax break on homeownership. It doesn't actually increase homeownership among people who would otherwise not buy a house because of the mortgage deduction. Is that a fair argument, Richard?
It can affect your ability to purchase, but it can create other distortions too, and it's skewed toward the wealthy. It doesn't necessarily help renters. So there's a lot of nuances to that particular policy argument, and if they pursue that one, you'll hear them all on the news because that lobby is fairly strong, and there's a lot of dollars on the table. So that'll be an interesting one, and that's one of many, which is why even what we think this proposal is in the few words and bullets that have been presented, it won't look like that when it hits the floor of the House. And it certainly won't look like that when it's done.
It'll look more like my tax return.
Probably.
So we have a Twitter comment. They say they don't mind paying their fair share of taxes as long as the money is used responsibly.
Thank you.
Government waste is the bigger issue. Well, that's interesting. We have also on the phone David. Good morning, David, and welcome to the show. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, more of a comment than the let your panel comment on my comment. How's that sound? The question I have is I have a lot of investments, and a lot of these companies I've noticed, like Burger King, Noble Energy, parts of Boeing, they're moving a lot of their operations overseas because the United States has a very high corporate tax. Denmark has a lower corporate tax. Sweden has a lower corporate tax. Norway, Finland, all these countries have lower corporate taxes. I don't mind increasing personal taxes, but what about reducing corporate taxes so these companies will stay here?
That is a really good question, David. And let me put this to the panel. President Trump says he wants to cut the corporate income tax to 15%. That is a pretty big cut because is it fair, my dear panel, is it fair to say that the United States has one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world?
We have one of the highest stated rates. It's not quite as bad when you look at effective rates. It's apples and oranges kind of comparisons.
So they finagled the system and our corporations don't actually pay what is on the chart.
That's correct.
No, right. It's 39% on the chart, I believe, and it's about 19% in reality.
It depends on the industry.
Typical, yeah, exactly. But the average effective tax rate paid by a company that would be subject to the highest statutory tax rate pays about 19%.
All three of my panel members have experience in state government making tax policy and monetary policy. You do, James.
Mm-hmm.
What does that sound like to you to cut the tax rate, even if we say more accurately that it's really only cutting it from 19 to 15?
Well, I mean, I would liken it to what happened here in New Mexico when the legislature and the governor approved a corporate income tax cuts here, justified by the fact that we would see this inflow of money into the state and job development. And it didn't happen. It absolutely did not happen. That's why I'm so skeptical about cutting the corporate income tax rate as a way of stimulating the economy here in the United States, because I just don't see evidence that that is actually going to keep businesses here. Now, one of the things that they ought to be thinking about is just as the personal income tax code is very complex, so is the corporate income tax code. And it's full of the kinds of things that Kelly and Richard have been talking about with special provisions for this industry or that industry. If they want to make tax reform happen and really make it effective, the way to do that is to basically simplify that code. And so arguably you can, like we've talked about at the state level, broaden the base and lower the rate a little bit without the massive impact to the federal deficit.
Now, Trump does say he wants to bring back foreign earnings that are held abroad by U.S. companies and give them, you know, some kind of special one-time deal. This, you know, you can hear him talking right here. We're going to give him a good deal. We're going to make a deal to bring that money back. I don't even know what that means, guys. Do you?
Yeah, actually, there's money that's earned overseas when repatriated by a U.S. domiciled corporation becomes subject to U.S. taxes, corporate taxes. So to avoid that, they simply don't bring it back.
When General Mills sells Cheerios in England, they just keep that money in England. They don't bring it home.
Correct. And a British company doing exactly the same thing, of course, wouldn't pay any U.S. corporate income tax either. So one. Our corporate structure is not the most sane of structures and could be revamped. There are disincentives to repatriation. I'm not trying to be overly sympathetic to corporations, but this trend in inversions becoming non-U.S. companies, we create incentive through our tax code to not be a U.S. company and to not have employment here and to not, you know, bring money back here and invest here. That doesn't make any sense. As your caller said earlier, you have to have demand or bringing money back doesn't matter. And you don't want to give money away. But you have to have a sane structure that offers the right incentives. So when people talk honestly about tax reform, that's what they're talking about, is creating a system of coherent incentives or at least the fewest disincentives possible to economic growth and activity while raising sufficient revenues for the programs that you need. And anything that's suboptimal is going to cost more money and provide fewer services. So to the other caller's point, you know, spending and all that, there are issues there too. Those are harder issues than most people ever want to admit as well. But back to the point earlier, Trump's plan, he's completely unclear on that. He has one bullet on what you just mentioned, and it bears no resemblance to the federal or to the House plan that they've been talking about for some time. And there was no mention of border tax adjustments in his one pager. And he'd been talking about that his entire campaign. That's part of a broader federal reform, like the House plan, the camp proposal of 2014. All of that appears to have gone by the wayside. And that's really what was consuming conversation in Congress for the last 2 years.
I want to go back to looking at some of the ways this outline might affect New Mexicans. We did get a Twitter comment from a listener who says, I wouldn't have bought my house if there weren't a mortgage deduction. It is attractive to a lot of people, for sure. But so one of the elements of this plan is repealing what Trump calls the Obamacare tax. What is the Obamacare tax and who's paying it? This is 3.8% on capital gains and dividends.
Well, it's people who have capital gains and dividends who are paying it.
I mean, guess if I don't know what that is, I don't have those.
Look at your tax return.
It's in your tax return.
I don't, so you probably don't.
I don't think I do.
It's generally speaking, I mean, not entirely, but generally speaking, it's going to be upper income people. Capital gains and dividends are you know, the product of investments, and investments are something that low income people and most moderate income people don't have a lot of. So that would be definitely another benefit that targets upper income people.
That's not going to be a huge help for a lot of New Mexicans. But what we do have here are a lot of small businesses, self-employed people who have little partnerships because they're accountants or they're dentists or, they have a little law practice, something like that. Trump wants to lower the tax on folks like that who don't actually file corporate tax returns, but they take that income and file like everybody else, putting it on their personal tax returns. This is called pass-through businesses, and Trump wants to lower the tax rate on them to 15%. Wouldn't this help a lot of New Mexicans?
This is a really interesting proposal that he's made, and one of the things that economists worry about, and particularly tax economists, is the behavioral changes that are incentivized by tax proposals. And so this one in particular would pretty clearly provide a huge incentives for people to change their filing status in order to pay lower tax rate. In and of itself, it doesn't really stimulate much of anything. It maybe allows that individual to keep more of their income. But one of the areas that I've been thinking about when I read about this was the way that it changes potentially the relationship for healthcare providers. As we know, in the large healthcare systems, the people that are providing the services, the doctors, for example, are a mixture of employees and some are contracted. This proposal would pretty clearly provide a huge incentive for those doctors not to want to be employees anymore. They would want to be contractors so that they could potentially take advantage of this. Now, there are some other reasons why they might not want to do that, but it would also suggest that there would be this huge behavioral change where some of these doctors then are no longer filing under the personal income tax. They're filing under the corporate income tax.
Well, what does that matter to me?
It matters to you because we are a piggyback state here in New Mexico, and when we are reducing the amount of taxable personal income taxes here, personal income here in the state, we are effectively reducing our personal income tax revenues that are used to provide things like K-12 education and higher education and all the services that we need.
I'm getting you here. It may help some professionals pay a lower tax rate because they'll switch around the way they file. But that means the state government will pull in less income, and we already don't have any money.
Exactly.
Okay, I get it. So one of the other terms that we see on this page is alternative minimum tax. Why does Trump want to repeal this thing?
It's another instance of a tax break that's pretty much geared towards the wealthy. The alternative minimum tax basically limits the deductions wealthy people can take by saying at some point you have to pay this alternative minimum tax if your liability gets too low as a result of taking a great deal of deductions. So getting rid of the alternative minimum tax is a tax benefit that would be entirely for wealthy people. Trump himself is a payer of the alternative minimum tax, not surprisingly. So that's another example of a tax break, a personal income tax break that is geared entirely towards upper income people.
So So there are so many deductions that we talked about earlier, things that people can use to lower their taxes. This does require almost always paying an accountant to find these things for you, paying someone who's an expert in this thing to find them. So what you're saying is that the alternative minimum tax is a way to limit that creative accounting to say, hey, cut it out. Stop taking all these deductions. Just pay X amount. And
yes.
And so we're not going to let people who make a lot of money whittle their taxes down so much. Am I getting that right?
There is a degree of simplification. Absolutely. And one thing that is probably worth mentioning, and I don't want to sound like a promoter of this plan at all, but doubling, I mean, certainly we don't know what the child care benefit is. If it takes the form of a deduction that's non-refundable, it's going to be skewed toward the wealthy and not towards poor households. If it takes some other form, it could go the other way. It's an important question, and we just simply don't know the answer. But when you double the standard deduction, we have a lot of marginal taxpayers in New Mexico.
What does that mean?
Just people that are starting to pay tax, barely paying tax on the last third of their income, the last quarter of their income, the last half of their income. When you double that personal exemption, that takes another $5,000 off the table. We're going to take a lot of taxpayers in New Mexico off the federal rolls when we do that. That will be a benefit to those families. And those again, they're the marginal. They're the lower taxpaying families. A lot of the other issues here will cost them in the long run. And the question is, what is the balance? But there could be perverse implications from that as well. You know, the deductions that they're getting rid of that are itemized, some are there for a reason, as Kelly was saying earlier. You know, whether you can question their efficacy, but like charitable giving, I'm not going to, I give pretty generously locally to groups that help Albuquerque families. When you double the standard deduction, I will have zero incentive to do that personally.
Other than being a nice guy.
I'm not saying I will discontinue to do it, but currently I receive a 30 after the state, over 30% benefit. So I keep, 30 cents on the dollar for every dollar that I give to charity. Is that a good public policy? Yeah, you can debate it both ways, but that's the reality of the situation is my incentive to do so will be reduced.
I think James has an opinion on this.
No, I do. We do have an opinion on that since there's a lot of well, let me put it this way. I think it's pretty clear that our state and local governments are incapable of providing the level of service to help New Mexico families, and that is why there is a plethora of nonprofit organizations that are out there that do that kind of work. The incentive for wealthy people to provide funding for those organizations is an important one.
And even not so wealthy people like Richard is a pretty normal guy.
Well, and super wealthy is a little different. They'll itemize anyway. And whether that's included, I mean, Trump says he's not going to include that. But I use that as an example because we don't know. And those are the kinds of things that can be impacted by these sorts of policies.
Folks, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how President Trump's tax outline might affect you. Should we cut taxes on big corporations and small businesses? What do you want to see the federal government do about taxes? What kind of change do you want? We do want to know what you think. So call us 877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also tag us in a tweet with your question at KUNM News, and we will be right back.
Honda, Buick, Pontiac, Ford, Toyota, Cadillac, Subaru, and Volvo, too. They become a part of you. When they've brought you many miles, when they've brought you many smiles, it's not as hard to let them go when it's more than just a tow. You can do some good with them. Donate to KUNM. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. Next best thing to old car heaven. Well, I got me a car.
The National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Native Women and Girls is this Friday. We're taking the next hour of Native America Calling to explore what happens in the family, in the tribal community, and in the police station when someone goes missing. We'll talk about possible solutions and ways you can help. We hope you'll join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. I am here with tax consultant Kelly O'Donnell, James Jimenez with Voices for Children, and Richard Anglum of the New Mexico Tax Research Institute. And we are talking about the outline of tax proposals that President Trump released last week. We have some comments from the email. Nance says she thinks of taxes as the price of civilization, and that as we cut taxes, middle class folks get a little more money in their pockets while the services and programs that serve them are cut. Meanwhile, rich people get a lot more money in their pockets and our civilization crumbles. She calls for the middle class to realize this and stop giveaways to the wealthiest on Wall Street. We also have an email comment from Ken, who says the Clinton administration raised taxes and then there was great economic growth. Why did a tax increase work then and a tax cut didn't? Well, there were some other things going on at the same time as the tax increases in the
there
Clinton
was a sunrise
administration
before the last World War, too. And, you know, causation and causality or I'm getting the reference,
yeah.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Causation is not.
And some things take time. Nothing happens immediately. But to Kelly's point earlier, you know, the evidence, you know, tax cuts are expensive and they don't typically pay for themselves. That is a fair general rule.
And the amount of money that low and moderate income people get from tax reform doesn't offset oftentimes the loss in terms of services that are provided. We have a poor healthcare system. We have a poor education system. We haven't done anything about really incentivizing work. I mean, we could do things like increase the earned income tax credit, which only goes to people that are working, for example. That really does put money in the hands of working people, and evidence shows that they spend it, and they spend it locally.
It's people who are working but not earning very much.
Exactly. You know, if we really wanted to stimulate the economy, what we ought to be talking about is how do we incentivize entrepreneurial activity. Job growth happens primarily from small business creation and smaller businesses adding a few more jobs. And it's an organic process that can take time. This notion that we can slash corporate income taxes and all of a sudden, as Richard points out, some magic happens and, you know, we're all happy. It's not borne out by the evidence.
But, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the majority of jobs being created by small businesses. But this plan would cut taxes on those small businesses. Wouldn't that be a help to them creating jobs?
There might be some benefit to those businesses. My point would be that we ought to be even more strategic than that and really focus on our entrepreneurial activity, the small business person who was really trying to make a go of it, rather than these sort of generalized tax cuts where we know most of the benefit is going to flow to the corporations that are already doing quite well as it is.
We have a caller on the line, David in Albuquerque. David, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I am calling to present an idea, I guess you could say, and then a question on how that could work. I don't know if your panelists or other people have heard of the idea of basic income, where people get paid through some sources that are based on improving society in general, which would stimulate the economy in general. But the idea I have is, since we're not going to get much help from Trump to do that kind of a thing, is to start a business that would take care of that kind of a process, where support maybe would come from foundations or whoever needs to support society in general. So my question is kind of, what kind of business might you guys say would be in terms of taxes, keep the taxes low, yet so money goes to the basic income for poor people?
I have to admit, David, I'm not totally clear on what you're suggesting here. Can you just rephrase it one more time for us?
Yeah, trying to get money to the poor people, because we're not going to get help from Trump, you know, at this point. He's not showing that. So as a business, having people get hired in that business as employees to supply a basic income without having to necessarily work. And then what kind of a business that would be? Is there any ideas on that?
Well,
a nonprofit by definition.
Yeah, nonprofit.
It's I've heard of the concept of basic income. I'm not in. There was a European country, I forget which one, that had it under discussion very recently, but I don't know enough about it to comment intelligently.
David, you're sending a whole bunch of people to Google right now who are going to go look up that idea, and we will we'll talk about it on the next show. Thank you for that. We also have Susan on the line in Santa Fe. Susan, good morning, and welcome to the call-in show.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me? I'm on a cell phone.
We can. Go ahead.
Okay, so my comment was just that we're always asking what does the tax code changes mean to an individual. And I believe that that's the wrong question, because if each individual is only looking to reduce their own payments, then the whole system breaks down. I mean, we're part of a larger community, so you need to look at the tax code from a holistic perspective and say, well, how does the tax code keep our community, whether it's a city, a state, or a country, how do we keep it fiscally sound? My husband and I don't have children, but we always vote for school taxes. If we were only concerned about ourselves, we wouldn't support the schools, but we live in a commons and we need to support each other.
Susan, thank you for that perspective. I think when it comes to taxes, a lot of people are all over the map. You know, they think, well, how is this going to benefit me? Am I going to pay more? Am I going to pay less? Is my business going to pay more? Is my business going to pay less? And then they think, well, what could the impact be bigger term? Maybe we don't actually spend enough time thinking about what the longer term impact will be. Let me ask my panel here. What is the connection between this federal tax plan and New Mexico taxes, and how the state would be affected by that? We've kind of touched on it here and there, but big picture wise, James?
Well, Gwyneth, I think Susan is exactly right. You know, I've been teaching budget courses now for about 8 years here at the university, and we talk about the budget as a value statement, and the budget includes both the taxes and the spending. And so Susan is absolutely right. The taxes in and of themselves, I think, are really mostly important because of what they provide. They provide civilization. They provide education. They provide health care. They provide public safety. They provide clean water. They provide clean air. All of those things that make a really strong quality of life for us. And she's right in the sense that we need to be looking at this tax reform, not in just the sense of what does it do for me, but what does it do to our ability as a society to provide the things that are important to us.
One of the things that I think is interesting is that there are a lot of fiscal conservatives out there, deficit hawks, a lot of Republicans and some Democrats who say you cannot have huge tax cuts like this without raising the deficit. But so the deficit goes up.
No. That's where the miracle happens. 3% GDP.
But okay. I mean, it is possible. We had huge growth during the Clinton administration.
Right after a world war. We can do it after a world war.
Because of the tech boom, which we didn't quite envision, right? So there could be something we don't quite envision. I'm an optimist, Richard. There could be something that could happen. Let's just say it's possible. But what is the impact of ballooning the deficit? To me, this is a number on a ticker that I see, and I think, oh, that's a number. What does that mean to us if the deficit goes way up?
Picture your credit card, and you go shopping tomorrow with it, and the number on the bank statement balance goes up, but nothing happens, right? You make your $50 minimum payment, and next week you do the same thing, and next week you do the same thing. And we've been doing that now since I think 2000 was the last time we didn't have a deficit, and we only had a positive revenues for 2 years. So you have to pay the piper at some point. And as a percentage of GDP, servicing that debt, paying the interest, especially in a higher interest rate environment than we're in today, which is more likely than not because we're in a very low interest rate environment, can become very expensive. And what happens then? You crowd out your ability to provide for your military, for your poor, for your elderly, all the programs and things that government does.
Because you're, let me make
we're paying interest.
Yeah, if this were a family, you've got this credit card and you can't put it off forever. So eventually the payment is so big that you are unable to make your car payment, or you're unable to make your rent, or you're unable
or you
to buy
less.
Shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, because you've got this debt that's crowding you out. So let's kind of recap this thing. Kelly, who are the biggest winners in this plan? Is it just rich people?
They are the primary winners. I mean, the reality is there isn't enough detail on this plan to know exactly who wins and loses. The broad issues that have been spelled out to the extent that they've been explained, it would appear that the big winners are very upper income households. The ultimate impact is you know, the devil's always in the details, and that's particularly the case in tax policy. So, you know, there may well be some benefits for other households, but it's just there just aren't the details in this plan to be able to determine that. We can see, however, from the details that do exist, that major beneficiaries will be very upper income households.
Okay, so James, don't middle income families get a little bit of help here with doubling the standard deduction and doing something to increase tax help for childcare and lowering the tax rate on self-employed people or small partnerships? Wouldn't that help some regular New Mexicans?
In fairness, that probably would happen by doubling the standard deduction. But as Kelly's pointed out, there's not a lot of details in it, so we don't know specifically who is going to benefit and by how much. It's pretty clear, though, that lower-income people receive very, very little benefit in terms of the dollar amounts. And I suggest there's a couple of places that your listeners can go to continue to try and understand this. One would be the Tax Policy Center has a good website, as does the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, also known as CBPP. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. They have some really good information on how this impacts folks.
Richard, what's missing from, I mean, aside from a whole bunch of details.
There's a lot missing.
But what topics aren't on this page, this one-page outline from the Trump administration?
Well, I think to your caller's point, you know, we have a very populist president, and he's trying to appeal to people's individual heartstrings, whatever they are. And so what I don't see is a lot of real reform. But as Kelly said, there's not enough to know what they're really doing. But you don't see any of the reform proposals that were discussed in the campaign that have been discussed in recent years. It's more of just tax cuts to make people feel good is what it feels like to me. And to your caller's point, and I'll echo what James said, she was absolutely right. I mean, it's not about what it does to me personally. You can raise my tax a dollar, lower it a dollar. It's not going to change my world that much. Easy for me to say that, but it's how the entire system works. Does it raise enough money, and does it do so efficiently? That's
and eventually it's going to cost you money to replace the tires that are shredded by the roads that didn't get fixed.
Exactly. Yeah. So deferring isn't the same as paying for stuff. And really, when you fail to pay for it, you're just deferring.
So I'm going to ask you each to tell me one thing you wish were on this piece of paper. Kelly, is there one piece of tax reform or relief or simplification that you wish we were talking about right now?
Well, I think James brought up the earned income tax credit, and I think that's a very important part of the tax code in terms of creating incentive to work and helping low-income earners to get by on you know, relatively low wages. So I think that's huge, and I think if we saw an expansion of that, that would be a very good thing, for fairness and for the state of New Mexico and our economy.
We only have a few seconds left. James, do you have something for the wish list?
Better incentivize an entrepreneurial activity.
Awesome. Richard?
Yeah, I'd like to see some real reform on the business tax side.
Thank you so much to my excellent panel this morning and for all of our callers and listeners. Thank you specifically to tax consultant Kelly O'Donnell. Kelly, thank you so much for being on the phone today.
Thank you.
And thank you, James Jimenez from Voices for Children.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Richard Anglim of the New Mexico Tax Research Institute.
Thank you, Gwyneth.
We have posted links to the information we discussed today, some news stories and information. Check them out at KUNM.org. If you missed any of our program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can email your comments about today's show to callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter @KUNM News. Tune in next Thursday morning at 8. We'll be talking about funding for addiction and drug treatment services. There is just not enough to go around. That's next Thursday morning at 8 on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks to Marino Spencer, who engineered the show today. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. The show was live tweeted by Anna Landy, who is graduating this month. Congratulations, Anna. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.